Let's begin by thanking the University of Iowa Brass Faculty Brass Ensemble for that beautiful processional. And please remain standing while we sing America the Beautiful, led by music faculty member Kaylee Ferguson. Please be seated. Honored trustees, Dr. Morris, Dr. Hagelin, Dr. Abramson, Ms. Crowley, distinguished faculty, dear students, parents, families, and friends, welcome to our commencement ceremony for 2012, the 38th commencement ceremony of Maharshi University of Management. Today we are graduating 268 students with degrees from the university. This includes our largest graduating class of undergraduate students in more than 20 years. It includes 196 students who are receiving master's degrees, and that includes 119 students with degrees in computer science and 56 students receiving MBAs. And that number includes 5 students receiving the highest academic degree, the PhD, the Doctor of Philosophy. Our youngest graduating student this year is Rosalie Vandenbos, this year's outstanding student in media and communications, who's still just 20 years old. And our most senior graduating student is Ahalya Baguio, who is 67. She finished her degree requirements earlier this year, so she's not with us today, but it's worth saying that she completed her bachelor's degree in literature summa cum laude with a 3.98 grade point average. And our next most senior student is Shimon Zilber from Israel, who is here and graduating with a master's degree in Maharshi Vedic Science, age 66, with a GPA of 3.92. And to paraphrase a statement familiar to many of us, age is no barrier to education. Among our graduating students today, we have 37 countries represented. And apart from the 70 American graduating students graduating today. The country graduating the most students with a total of 55 is Nepal. In second place with 54 students is Ethiopia. Now, looking ahead to next year, we have to ask Ethiopia whether they are content with being number two. And so many other countries, ranging from Colombia to Cambodia, from Moldova to Malaysia, from El Salvador to Eritrea, from Spain to Slovenia, Tanzania to Thailand, and so many more. And you will hear each of the countries named as each student receives his or her diploma. Our students truly form an international community. And to all those of you who are here from other countries, thank you for having been here, for bringing to us your cultural values, your unique perspectives, for deeply enriching the diversity of our community on the ground of the unity of the inner unbounded self in which we all share. Also among our graduating students, we have 82 students who've completed advanced training in the TM City program, including yogic flying, which adds more power to their growth of higher states of consciousness and their ability to create a better world around them. So our congratulations to each and every one of you. You have been the life and breath of our university. To those of you who will be continuing on in the university, fantastic. And to those of you who will be staying on in the community, wonderful. And for those of you who will be leaving, wherever you may go, whatever you may do, please stay in touch, please stay connected, please keep us posted, and please, please come back and visit us. And to all of you, to each and every one of you, please find more students exactly like you and send them here because we love you all so much. To introduce our commencement speaker, I would like to introduce Dr. Bob Roth, who's a member of the university's Board of Trustees. He's Director of Expansion of the National Transcendental Meditation Organization under the leadership of Dr. John Hagelin, and he's the Vice President of the David Lynch Foundation, Dr. Bob Roth.
For tens of millions of Americans, Candy Crowley has been our eyewitness to history. She has traveled to nearly 100 countries over the past 30 years, giving us the news. Wherever there is change in the world, wherever there is change that is of such a dramatic sort that it directly impacts our own individual lives in a big way, Candy has given voice to that change, and fortunately, she has helped make sense of that change. She has ridden millions of miles on campaign buses, I'm about to make a bit of an exaggeration, and flown zillions of miles on campaign planes to cover every presidential campaign since 1984. She has personally interviewed Presidents Reagan, Bush, Clinton, second Bush, and President Obama. And here's the thing. People trust Candy Crowley. They just do, for good reason. She gives us the news straight. Her words are naturally imbued with honesty, integrity, balance, insight, compassion, brevity, and wit. And her peers trust her too. Candy has received an Emmy Award, the Gracie Allen Award, the Edward R. Murrow Award, the Joan Shorenstein Barone Award for Excellence in Journalism, the DuPont Columbia University Silver Baton Award, the Dirksen Awards for Distinguished Reporting on Congress from the National Press Foundation, the Associated Press Broadcasters Award, the Associated Press Award, and Columbia University's Armstrong Award. Candy learned Transcendental Meditation about 2 years ago and has been a wonderful supporter of bringing the Transcendental Meditation technique to hundreds of thousands of at-risk youth who attend underserved schools in inner cities all over the world, and to veterans who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. She wants me to sit down now. I'm about one-tenth of the way. Candy is here with her son, Jonathan, an absolutely fantastic human being and a great musician, and his girlfriend, Caroline, who's also a fantastic human being and quite an expert on Ayurvedic medicine. This is not foreign soil. Iowa is not foreign soil for Candy. It's quite familiar. She and her family lived in Des Moines for 5 years in the 1980s. When we're driving along, she's really appreciating the rolling hills. It's easy to appreciate sunlight and light when it's a full sunshine. It takes, in my opinion, an enlightened vision to find lessons of truth when it's not so bright. Lessons of truth amidst war or combat or dissension. Candy Crowley, as you will hear, has a very enlightened vision. As I said at last night's award ceremony, there are infinite number of marketing firms who tried to brand this newspaper or that television station as the most trusted name in news. Well, don't believe the hype. The fact is, there is one name in journalism who merits that high praise. Please join me in welcoming truly the most trusted name in news, Miss Candy Crowley.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for that welcome. This has been, even though I lived in Iowa, this is my first trip here. It has been great. Someone said, well, what brought you out here? I mean, why did you decide to do this address? I said, because I could come and see it. So it is a huge benefit to me to come and talk with some of you all and meet you all and to be here on your day. Congratulations. President Morris, members of the Board of Trustees, the faculty, the staff, the parents, thank you all for being so welcoming. Just a quick story, since he's here and I can embarrass him. I won a second Emmy at some point in my career, and I called my youngest son. I have two sons, and I called my youngest, and I said, oh, guess what, honey? I won a second Emmy for whatever it was for, and he said, oh, Mom, that's wonderful. That's great. That's so cool, because now when you die, we can both have one. So, which is why you have children, because they keep you humble and on point. But I know you love me. It's okay. I learned so much along the way. You know that book about everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten? It's not true. Every day you should learn something, and the job I have has enabled me to learn so much from so many people. So I want to bring their lessons here to you in the hopes that one or two of them will have some resonance, and you can walk away from here with your great degrees and go do great things, as I know you all will. Bob Dole, I covered him in 96, who's a Republican who ran for president, and he had what he called the three B's of speech making, which is be on time, be brief, be seated. So I am going to try to live up to the Bob Dole standard of how you do these things. But I wanted to start out with a story of two men who grew up in the civil rights era. One of them is John Lewis. If you don't know who John Lewis is, you should look him up. He is, to me, a hero walking this earth. He was at one point the head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the South. He was an original member of the Freedom Riders who rode through the South trying to integrate segregated bus stations. He was the leader of a march that became known as Bloody Sunday from Selma to Montgomery. They were told to stop by state police as they were trying to register new voters. And when they kneeled down to pray, the protesters were beaten. John Lewis nearly lost his life in a couple of these events. He was the keynote speaker at the March on Washington with Martin Luther King. So he is the fiercest, quiet man I have ever known in my life. He is quite the guy, and he was always out there. And we have this piece that we do on CNN that we put up on our website, and it's called Getting to Know. And it was based on my theory that you all, when you watch TV or have time for it, you see that what we call talking heads, and that's really how you view them. They are flat caricatures, and this guy's a rabid right person, and this one's a loony left person, and you don't really know who they are. And I thought, if we could just ask them questions about their life, maybe we could put that up on the website. People say, well, that guy said this, I want to go see, because I feel like if you know where people came from, you can understand where they are. And so John Lewis came on, and I've known him for some time, and I said, John, were you ever scared? You were beaten. People were dying all over the South for civil rights at the time that he was fighting for it. And he said, no, because I knew that regardless of what happened, this movement was right and this movement would go on. I wasn't afraid. At another point, I interviewed Herman Cain. He's an African-American Republican. John Lewis is a Democrat from Georgia. Herman Cain is a Republican from Georgia. He ran this time around for president. And in the getting to know questions, one of my producers had said to me, did you know that Herman Cain cuts his own hair? I said, oh, that's kind of interesting. So I said to him, so I understand you cut your own hair. He said, yep, I have for 35 years. And I said, really? I said, why do you cut your own hair? And he said, you know, when Cain was growing up, he was offered to be one of the first African Americans to help integrate schools in and around Atlanta. And he went to his father, and his father said, well, I don't know that you could, you know, concentrate on your studies if you become a part of this, but it's up to you. You do what you want, but you have to excel. Herman Cain chose to stay in his all-black at that point school. He graduated with honors from high school. He went on to get a college degree. He went into the Navy. He was a successful businessman. He started Godfather's Pizza. He's on the Federal Reserve Board, ultimately ran for president. So he told me that part of his life and his father and how he did not join in did not want to be part of the class that was helping to integrate, and he stayed in his school. And he said, when I was in the Navy, I went up to Washington on an assignment, and he said, I was in Virginia, and I walked by a barber shop, and I thought, oh, I need a haircut, and there were three black barbers in there. And so he said, I went in, and I sat down, because in the South, you sit down, and you just sort of wait for someone to call you, and you go up and get your haircut. And he said, I waited, and someone would come in, they'd take that person, someone else would come in, they never did me, so I went up and I said to one of the barbers, hey, I need to get a haircut. And the black barber said to Herman Cain, you know, we can't cut black hair here. You have to go on the other side of the Sears and Roebuck. There's a barbershop that will cut black hair. And Herman Cain walked out of that barbershop, walked into the Sears and Roebuck, bought himself a pair of shears, and has been cutting his own hair ever since. And I loved both those stories because they told you so much about who these men were and how they got to be who they are and how they got to believe what they believe. And from them, what I drew was, to get to where you want to go, you first have to stand and be who you are. And both of them stood in their own way to be who they were to get where they got. And that's my first lesson that I pass along to you from them. I think the other thing I took from that is, you know, you do your revolution your way, but you have to let other people do their revolution their way. I took that from them as well. 9/11 was a huge time, as you may know, for I think everybody looked inside themselves, went where they could for some peace, some calm, some unstressful times. I was on the streets of New York in the aftermath, where everyone was putting up posters, and there were so many stories that you talked to people about, and they all had stories, particularly about why their loved one was or was not in one of those twin towers. And one of the stories, a woman said to me, you know, my husband is always in the Twin Towers in his office at 8:50, which would have been after the first plane struck. And she said, but today, the cat threw up, and my daughter was so upset that my husband said, it's okay, honey, the cat's going to be fine. We'll clean it all up, and then I'll drive you to school. So he was late and was not in the building. Someone else would say to you, my husband hasn't been in that. We've lived in New York for 30 years. My husband was never in that building except for a friend of his he hadn't seen since college came, and he wanted to take him up to give him the view of New York, and that's why he was in the building. And the more I heard those stories, everyone talked about how afraid they were after 9/11, and I realized that 9/11 made me braver. Because the fact is that so much of life is random, as you probably already know, but it gets even more random as you move out there, that you take control of the broad sweeps of your life and then live it unafraid. And I really felt like all of those people in New York taught me, sort of as a journalist, that you move through life freely, move through it unafraid, and keep going, and your life will take care of itself. Bottom line is, as we like to say in news, my bottom line here is be unafraid to live your life. Charlie Rangel is a congressman from Harlem, longtime congressman. He is also a Korean War veteran. He won the Bronze Star, he won the Purple Heart for his activities in Korea. And I went to his office one day because I was doing a series in the run-up to the Gulf War about what's it like to go to war, what's a young person thinking, you know, generally what that whole process is like. And so I said to him, he was showing that he had his medals in a little case someplace. I said, oh, wow. I said, well, how'd you win these? Well, and it says on the thing, and he was caught with his unit behind enemy lines. So he was in North Korea, and he was caught. And he led them out and back to safety under heavy fire. And I said, wow, so you're a hero. And he said, you know, the two people that were the heads of the unit had died while we were there. We were under heavy fire. And so I was the de facto head of the unit. He said, I had a compass and I got a hold of a map. I didn't have the slightest idea where I was going, but I knew if we stayed there, we'd all die. So I stood up and said, come on, men, follow me. And he said, and now they call me a hero. And I just imagine there are a lot of heroes out there that just went the wrong way. They just went the wrong way. From that, I came to know and believe and pass along to you that heroics are in the deed, not necessarily in where it goes. You can be heroic. You are sitting next to heroes in many ways. I think we throw that term around a lot. But I loved the notion that here is this man that, you know, says, look, I took a guess and went left. I could have gone right and it would have ended much differently. But the deed itself is heroic. So go out and be heroic. In the same series that I did, I talked to a man named Tom Ridgefield, a Republican from Pennsylvania, governor. He was the first Homeland Security Secretary, a tough guy, fought, he was a Marine, fought in Vietnam and was a grunt. I mean, not an officer. He was out there in the rice paddies, in the jungles, all day long for more than a year. And it was fairly horrific. He had a hard time talking to me about it. And one of the sections of the stories that we did was called What Lingers, meaning we're 30, 40, 50 years past some of these experiences. What lingers with you? When you think of this experience, what lingers? So I put that to Tom Ridge, and he said to me, it's the nights. If you had time to think about them and you looked up into the stars were beautiful because there's no artificial illumination there. You are in the middle of nowhere. And so on a moonlit night, it is just like dusk or dawn. It was very quiet. It was beautiful. So find the beauty wherever you are. It is there. Sometimes you have to look very hard for it. You've come to this amazing place, made an amazing decision to come here. It gets a little tougher, as you all, some of you already know, when you get out there. But the fact that this Marine, kind of in the middle of a country that he knew nothing about and could find, you know, couldn't find his way out of if he had tried. And what he remembers from all of that experience and all of that combat is how beautiful the night sky is in Vietnam. Find the beauty in what you're doing, regardless of what it is. So a couple of personal observations as well that I just learned from the fact that, you know, I was a single mom. I had a full-time job. And I was the first single mom actually on air at CNN. That's how long ago that was. And everyone always says to me, how do you balance that? And we all know where you find balance. But the truth is, how do you put that balance into action in your day-to-day life? And I always thought of my life as a BOSU ball, as sort of standing on that ball where you achieve balance, but then something does this, so you've got to re-achieve it. And that, to me, is the balance of life. Balance is a verb. It's a transitive verb. It's something that moves. When I was in at home working or at work, about 3 o'clock, my stomach started to hurt because I knew my children were coming home, and I always felt like I was in the wrong place. Like the balance is that I should be home when they were home, and yet in TV world, 3 o'clock is about when the action starts because you're driving for the 5, 6, or 7 p.m. show. So that's always when I was the busiest, always when my children would call, and it was like a constant source of stress for me. And so I'd be sitting on the desk writing a story and crashing a story and trying to get something out, and someone would answer the phone, be one of my children, and they would call those the Crowley kid calls. And so I get this Crowley kid call, and I realize that, you know, there's no good way to handle this balance. Like, how do you balance, you know, this is not going to make air, and that's my job, and yet this is my child, and nothing's more important. So I developed my own 3B plan, which is the person answering the phone would say, is it broken, burning, or bleeding? And if the answer was no, I would call them back. If it was yes, I got on the phone. Only twice did they say yes. So it was a good plan. So balance is that minute-to-minute, day-to-day thing that you try to achieve. I think that my mother used to call, I think this is a biblical reference. She used to talk about the still small voice within you that tells you what to do. You all know what to do. We all do. We sometimes don't do it, but we all know in a given situation what to do. And push came to shove for me at one point in my career. Actually, this wasn't all that long ago. In 2000, in the summer of 2000, George Bush, the son, was running, hadn't picked his vice president yet. And we knew the week he was going to announce it, and it happened to be the same week as a long-standing family reunion up in Michigan. And I thought, and the office, the pressure was very heavy. And they said, well, no, he's going to announce his vice president, and la, la, la. And I opted for the family reunion, mostly because I thought my mother would kill me. But I opted for the family reunion because I knew that still small voice said to me, when you're that unsure, you know the right thing to do is to go for the personal and not for the job. And in the end, we came up with what I used to call my deathbed test. And it was, what will I be thinking in my final hours? And I was pretty sure at the time it would not be, dang, I wish I'd been there when George Bush announced Dick Cheney. When all else fails, give it the deathbed test. It will never fail you. I also have learned a little bit, believe it or not, from country western music, which some of you may or may not be familiar with. One of my favorite songs, I think it's Garth Brooks, the refrain is, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. When I graduated from college, I was 20 years old. I was engaged to a man. I was going to move. He was finishing out his college. I was going to move with him to California. I was planning on having 5 boys with him. I was planning on ironing his shirts while he went to work. And then at night when everyone was quiet in bed, I was going to write the great American novel. None of this happened. And yet that was my dream. Now, what did happen was, I can tell you about a night I spent on the rooftop of an Italian restaurant looking out over the city of Marrakesh. I can tell you about the night I slept in the Sahara with the king, not with the king, but in the same. let me rephrase that. This is why you should write out specifically what you want to say. I was in the Sahara And there were multiple tents, and I was in one of them, and the king was in another. We were there. We were there on a Hillary Clinton trip. We got up early in the morning and rode camelback to the top of the dunes to watch the sunrise over the Sahara. I've been to China with three different presidents. These things were so outside the framework of my ability to dream. So while I wish your dreams to come true, I also want to tell you that your best life may be in the undream. So watch for the undream. I also, in the news business, we call this burying the lead. I did marry a man I love very much. I had two boys, and sometimes it seemed like 10, so we were good. It was quite the experience, and again, it was my undream, and I am so happy my undream came true. You know this. Be honest. One of the things that I think makes relationships, whether it's with your children, your spouse, your friends, your parents, I used to say to my children all the time, I will go to the barricades for you, but I got to know I've got the true story. Because the minute I find out it's not the true story, I can't ever go to the barricades again because that faith is broken. So I think you not only have to be honest, you have to demand honesty in your life. It's not always easy to do. It's easier to hear a lie sometimes than the truth. But your relationships are better if you both give honesty and demand honesty. And for my final point, which is my all-time favorite and which has so enriched my life, and the one thing, if they said, tell them one thing, this is what I would have told you. To do that, since there are 37 countries represented here and people from all over, if you are not a basketball fan, I need to give you a definition. A point guard is the player who's responsible for directing the basketball team's attack. He's leading the advance. That's what a point guard is. With that in mind, in the last election, I had a very rough time. I was not happy, I thought, in what was being asked of me. I used my youngest son as a sounding board, and I would call him often in tears, which mothers shouldn't do, but I did. And I was so convinced that I could not continue with journalism anymore. I was worried about what it became. I said, I can't do this, because he said, well, Mom, you know, but you're this kind of journalist, do that. And I said, I can't, because they'll say this, and then I do that, and then they, and this, and I just don't know what to do, and everything's bad. So he would always sort of walk me off the edge of the cliff, and then one night we had one of those conversations, and I was so sure that I could not be who I wanted to be in the environment I was in, and it was weighing on me heavily, and it was weighing on my work, I thought, and that worried me even more. And so I got a text message, and here's what the text message said. Mom, remember, it's like being a point guard. Run your offense the way you run it. Don't let them take you out of your game. I congratulate you. Go out there. Be point guards. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Candy, for that beautiful address and those beautiful words of guidance. Any one of the points that you gave could have been a pole star that could guide a person's life, and you gave us a whole set of them based on real, authentic experience. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And obviously, you have lived them, and we're glad that you have started with your point number one about being who you truly are. I'd like to invite Josh Wilson to give a special award to Ms. Crowley to add to her list of awards. Josh, of course, graduating today with a degree in sustainable living and our outgoing Global Student Council president.
Thank you for coming. As my last act as president of the student body, it is with immense pleasure that I am able to present this award. Every December, our students select an award recipient to receive a Maharshi Award in recognition of their great work. Unfortunately, due to the grueling schedule during the presidential primaries, Candy wasn't able to visit Fairfield. Candy, as is our tradition, we celebrate and welcome the beginning of each season with appreciation and joyfulness. Through your creativity and success in life, you have demonstrated the potential for success inherent in the life of every individual. Your life is a shining example and a demonstration to all of what is possible when one's life is favored by natural law. Your positive, progressive influence is an essential contribution to the continuing tradition of success in the greater world community. You are a world-class journalist, asking the tough questions, making us think critically, engaging us to wrestle with understanding the human condition in a no-nonsense style. And that's a special trait. And it assigns you a special task. Because in moments of calm, as in moments of crisis, in times of triumph, as in times of tragedy, you help guide our growth as a people. The true power of journalism is that you speak to everyone. I have to say, Candy, I'm still a bit starstruck, but the show must go on. On behalf of the student government of Maharshi University of Management, with great joy and appreciation, I hereby present Candy Crowley a Maharshi Award for the area of information and inspiration, the expression of the highest esteem of our community. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in celebrating Candy Crowley.
Now we ask Patrick Siljestam, graduating today with a bachelor's degree in business, our valedictorian, to give the valedictorian address.
Dear trustees, honored guests, faculty, staff, fellow students, and especially parents, Pangono, pangono. These two words in Chichewa I learned in Africa, and they mean little by little, or slow by slow. And they tell you to live life step by step, and that things take their time. I will come back to this later. I grew up in a transcendental meditation community in Sweden called Idealbyn, which means the ideal village. And when I was 5 years old, I asked my parents to teach me DM. And my parents never tried to persuade me to do my meditation, and always allowed me to make my own decisions and find my own reasons. And the greatest challenge in getting my degree here at MEM has been to be so far away from my family. And today at lunch, I was happily surprised by getting a bouquet of flowers and a letter from them. And so I feel that even though they're not here in person, they're in my heart. So I'm very grateful to have grown up in this community and in Sweden, and I want to honor my parents and everyone else who was a part of creating the ideal village in Sweden, because without them I wouldn't be standing here in front of you today. So, thank you. After high school, I studied various courses at a university in Sweden for a year, but I just didn't really feel at home, and I didn't really feel inspired or engaged. And so after that, I found my real passion traveling to Africa and working there as a volunteer. And the people in Africa, they were so happy. They were smiling and dancing and singing and laughing. And I think that the words pangono, pangono, taking things slowly, It allows people to be human instead of always trying to achieve too much. But but it was also in Africa that I realized the true value of education, because I could see these people that were smiling, they were happy and singing, but at the same time, they were facing great hardship. And the country I was in, Malawi, it's one of the poorest countries in the whole world. And I discovered there that possessions and money, they can't cure poverty, but education can, as is illustrated by the saying, give a man a fish and you'll feed him for one day. Teach a man to fish and you'll feed him for his life. So even though I helped schools improve their teaching methods and even built a preschool building with funds from Sweden, all this was external help, and I wasn't able to change people from the inside. And so I realized that true education not only teaches the student about the world around them, but also about their own inner self. And I wanted to lead people toward fully knowing themselves and help them find true happiness within. So as I realized this, I decided that I wanted to come here to MEM and study, because there was no other university in the whole world, according to me, that could support this aspiration of mine. And I knew I would feel at home here and connect to people from a deeper level. So out of my almost 3 years here at MEM, the most significant course I've taken that taught me something I'll be using several hours every day for the rest of my life is the City course. When I first came here as a student, I was reluctant to take the course, even though people were encouraging me to become a Seda, because I wanted to feel like it was my own decision and wait until it had settled into the routine and felt more comfortable, as I learned in Africa, taking things step by step, pangono, pangono. So after being at MEM for a little more than a year, I decided to take the City course, and it changed my world. If transcendental meditation is coming to a beautiful ocean and gazing upon it, then the cities is surfing the waves of that ocean. And if transcendental meditation is diving into your inner silence, then the cities is discovering the dynamism within that silence. So I consider the City course the most important tool I have for success in life, because it is my main source of inspiration, creativity, and happiness. So now I want to talk about the most important part of this university, the students. Because we are the reason MEM exists. Our search for knowledge is what created this university and continues to move it forward. So when I think of MEM students, three characteristics come to mind. The first one is having a strong sense of individuality, knowing that we are a unique expression of life. In whatever terms we choose to use, I think each of us feels that the individual is cosmic, and we all value our own thoughts, experiences, and opinions, and believe in the divinity of human existence. And the second thing is continuously questioning whatever we encounter as a way of engaging with teachers and acquiring knowledge, and this is a crucial ability to be a good student. So even though discussions have sometimes been lively and heated, I deeply respect students for their persistence, sincerity, and courage in asking questions. And I equally respect faculty and staff for their patience, openness, and conviction in doing their very best to answer our questions and keep the dialogue going. Now, thirdly, and to me most importantly, students here have a strong sense of inner knowing. We ask questions not because we are ignorant, but because we know the answer deep inside of us, and we want to manifest that answer into the world. I want you all to remember this, that the unbounded ocean of pure knowledge exists within you. And I feel like this university has grown along with us students. We have not only been taught by our teachers, but we have been teaching our teachers as well, and they have been willing to learn and listen from us. So seeing things week by week, there are no big changes, but changes happen bit by bit. Pangono, pangono. Comparing this university as it is now to how it was when I first came here 3 years ago, I can see significant changes resulting from dialogue and discussions. So I want to congratulate all students here for being involved in the growth of this university, for the change you have been part of creating and will continue to create as you go out into the world. I also want to thank all people working here for making this university not only a teaching organization, but also an evolving learning organization. So looking into the future, I made a decision to pursue my MBA here at MUM as an intern student, and I have already started. It's an honor to be at a workplace where my colleagues dive deeply within every day. I can feel a clear difference in the coherence that I can sense here compared to other places I've been working. So disagreements still come up, but they are belittled by the great unity that connects us all. The great dedication I see in my colleagues every day at work inspires me to do my best. And now as you, my fellow graduates, are about to take your next step in life, I want to leave you with a quote from the founder of the university, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. If we think of defeat, that's what we'll get. If we are undecided, then nothing will happen for us. We must just pick something great to do and then do it. Never think of failure at all, because as we think now, that's what we'll get. And I encourage all of you to do this. Pick something you feel passionate about and do it. Remember to be patient and that success takes time to build, little by little. Pangono, pangono. Thank you. Thank you. And Jay Gurdev.
Thank you, Patrick. That was an address that was profound and practical both. Patrick mentioned that he's an intern student in the MBA program. Intern student means that he works during the day, and what he's been doing these past months has basically taken charge of the university's five-year strategic plan. And it has been really impressive to see how quickly he's grasped our budget and how beautifully and deeply he thinks about real strategy. And I look at Patrick and I really see the future of Maharishi University of Management. So Patrick, stick around for a long time. We would like to keep you here. And now our salutatorian, Lillian Nickerson, graduating today with a bachelor's degree in sustainable living, will present the class gift.
I like to be called Flo. Thank you. Greetings, trustees, honored guests, faculty, fellow students, family, friends, and especially the graduating class of 2012. I'd like to express my gratitude to my family. I'm the example that it does indeed take a village to raise a child. Although they did not know that it would take 32 years, four colleges, and three different majors until I would grow up. I wish to express my much appreciation to my sustainable living department for all of your nurturing support. Sustainable living changes the world. It is the part of conscious living that admits coherence with natural law. I feel so grateful and privileged to have had the opportunity to come to MUM to finish my degree and to study with some of the most amazing professors on the planet who are my inspiration. Thank you to all the cool people who are graduating today. This is my definition of cool people. We are conscious in awareness, where we act with spontaneous right action. We can work natural law because we are natural law and have an in-depth understanding of its essence. We cultivate ourselves since we meditate and reflect the best of ourselves for ourselves and others. And some of us can even fly. Cool people embrace harmony exists in diversity. We are the ones who hug each other with warm smiles and hearts and nurture one another. There isn't a university on the planet with so much love. We can even hug our professors. Now we have the experiential reality of Vasudeva Kutumbakam. The Sanskrit term for the world is my family. Since the world is experiencing a shift in consciousness, it is our opportunity and responsibility to set the standard in accomplishing the mission of world peace. I compare the student experience with the lotus flower seeking the innate potential of enlightenment. It is the only flower that thrives in murky waters and that blooms and seeds at the same time, symbolizing the simultaneity of cause and effect. It is the conscious-based education combined with TM practice where we transcend, stirring up all the feelings of stress of our murky physiology, and at the same time, becoming in tune with the cause and effect of natural law. In this process, we accelerate our spiritual growth towards higher states of consciousness. Each experience that we have on our academic journey here adds to the blossoming spirit of being. We are now beautiful lotuses that have triumphed over our murky obstacles and leaving MUM more healthy in our minds, body, and spirit than when we began. My 93-year-old grandmother, Farida Abdullah, gave me this beautiful lotus flower necklace, and she said this expresses and symbolizes my life. I owe her much gratitude because she was my first mentor in life who taught me stewardship of the earth. Daily, I would share my excitement of my SL experiences. I can't wait to get home to help her cultivate her garden. We should always express appreciation for the knowledge of our mentors and professors. My spiritual mentor, Daisaku Ikeda, says, only through learning can we open the spiritual windows of humanity. My other mentor and founder of our great university, who we all cherish, is Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. We tap into the creative intelligence from the source of all knowledge in pure consciousness. Modern education has failed us in the aspect that the total brain remains undeveloped. But Maharishi envisions schools that develop students' creative genius by awakening their infinite creativity and intelligence within them, where higher education produces higher states of consciousness, and the students gain the fruit of all knowledge, life and fulfillment, free from mistakes and suffering, with the ability to engage total natural law to fulfill their desires. And that's taken from the complete book of Yogic Flying. Lastly, our tradition is that the class leaves a legacy gift to the university. Our gift is a $1,500 donation to plant fruit and shade trees on campus. To the class of 2012, I would like to share the last words of wisdom from the lyrics of MC Yogi. Be the change that you want to see in the world, just like Gandhi. Congratulations on a job well done. I am truly honored to be a part of the class of 2012. Jay Gurdev.
Thank you very much, Flo. I can't imagine any student address more beautifully capturing the precious value of consciousness-based education than that. That's so deeply thought and deeply felt. Thank you so much. Now we have congratulatory remarks from Dr. John Hagelin, who is professor of physics and one of the world's preeminent physicists. He's director of the university's Institute of Science, Technology, and Public Policy, a member of our board of trustees. He's the administrative leaders for the programs teaching the Transcendental Meditation program throughout the United States, in which capacity he is known as the Raja of Invincible America. He's the international director of the Global Union of Scientists for Peace, and he's the man whom our founder Maharshi called the voice of the unified field, Dr. Hagelin.
Thank you kindly. From the depth of my heart and my being, and on behalf of my dear fellow faculty and fellow trustees and fellow administrators of this great university, we extend to you our heartfelt congratulations for an extraordinary achievement. You are about to be college graduates, many of you with master's degrees and even doctoral degrees. It's a major milestone in the course of one's life. It gives you license to lead. It gives you the credentials to achieve anything you desire and anything within your great capability. It is a bittersweet time of year for your faculty and administrators because you are, in a sense, our reason for being. We've chosen this life of service to our students, not for necessarily the enormous allure of Iowa, nor the riches that flow unto us from doing so, but from the great joy of sharing the gifts of knowledge that we've all been so fortunate to receive from our professors and from the founder of this university, this profound practical wisdom of life to the future leaders of our world. You have not only accomplished and gained a great deal of knowledge, the best of knowledge that the world has to offer, but more than that, due to the nature of your choice to come to really that one university on earth that focuses not just on the content of knowledge, but on the full flowering of human consciousness and providing the tools and the wisdom to understand and experience and stabilize higher states of consciousness. You have something that your fellow graduates all across the country and across the world this time of year don't have. You have an accelerated capacity for learning. You have the capability to expand continuously on your capacity to gain knowledge, to expand continuously on your capacity to achieve, to expand continuously on your capacity even to be yourselves, and to expand continuously on your capacity for happiness. And that's not a small thing. Happiness, upon reflection, is the motivator of life. We do everything for one reason or another to increase our happiness and that of our fellow human beings. And happiness is not just a goal in itself, because it is a legitimate goal to be happy, but it is a means as well as a goal, because your happiness, the joy that you exude, the being, the life that you radiate, is the one most accurate measure of your success at any given moment and on any given day. You can perform an experiment at home, and that is to see what you achieve on any given day based upon your happiness upon awakening that morning or finishing your meditation that morning, or whether how much fatigue may be left over from whatever. It's that happiness that draws people to you and causes them to want to join your cause and to pitch in and help you achieve your desires. that happiness that is infectious, and it seems to attract not just your fellow human being, but the laws of nature to uphold more vibrant health and achievements in every way, on every level. Even wealth is drawn to such happiness. So you have gained not just an education, not just knowledge that will soon be obsolete, and not just the ability, however, to gain new knowledge, which to some degree a good education will provide for you, but really the capacity to accelerate one's capability to absorb knowledge, to synthesize, integrate, and use it. Gaining knowledge is not like storing a stream of sensory data on some internal disk drive. The data is in there somewhere, but it's our ability to comprehend it and to synthesize it and use it. And that has to do with the extent of our capability of comprehension. How narrowly bound by our agitated, active, fluctuating minds, how expanded, how relaxed, and how cosmic is that awareness. We have that capability to synthesize, which reaches its fulfillment day after day, slowly by slowly, as we just heard, in the development of higher states of consciousness, which is inevitable for you, the dream of many throughout the ages, but an unattainable dream lived by a few is now inevitable for you with the simple commitment to the continuing of respect for the program and the technologies that you have been given. So your achievement is great, far greater than those millions who are graduating throughout the world this day, this week, this month. It's an enormous achievement. It is an assurance of success and happiness and real leadership for this world. And so when I say it's bittersweet in a sense to see our students go, as many of you are now launching forth into the world to achieve wonderful things, it's sweet due to the excitement we share in knowing what you are about to achieve. And when we give our congratulations today, it is not just for what you have achieved, which is really great in comparison to all other graduates, but what you inevitably will achieve, nothing short of the transformation of civilization to what you all envision and desire it to be. So great congratulations and deep, deep thanks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hagelin, and thank you for your teachership and leadership of our university for so many years now, so much appreciated by all of us. Now, Dr. Kathy Guarini, Professor of Mathematics and Dean of Faculty, will present the graduating class and read the text of the diploma.
Trustees, it is my privilege to report to you that the candidates here assembled have qualified in all respects by successfully completing curricula offered by Maharshi University of Management and have been recommended by the faculty and board of trustees to be awarded appropriate degrees in recognition of their academic accomplishment. Now I will read the text of the Maharshi University of Management diploma. As a graduate of Maharshi University of Management, you have pioneered higher education for higher consciousness for the whole humanity. Through your study of consciousness and research in consciousness, the reality of higher states of consciousness is blossoming in your life. Through your study of Maharshi's Vedic science, you have come to know all about the knower, the process of knowing, and the known, all about consciousness, both in its self-referral, self-interacting state, and as it expresses itself in the infinite variety of natural law of the whole creation. Through your completion of programs of academic study at Maharshi University of Management, you have grasped the natural laws at the basis of your discipline and have learned to connect them to the source of all natural law in the most basic and universal level of nature's intelligence, the unified field of natural law, the self-referral field which governs the activity of the entire universe. Through practicing Maharshi's programs for the development of consciousness, you have grown to experience this unified source of natural law as the self-referral state of your own consciousness. You have understood that all branches of knowledge are but different modes of this self-referral field of intelligence or consciousness. Day by day, you have been growing to live the maxim of the Bhagavad Gita, Yogastha Kuru Karmani, established in yoga or union, perform action. On this basis, you are rising to enjoy the fruit of all knowledge, life lived spontaneously in harmony with natural law, free from mistakes and suffering. By the growth of alliance with natural law in your life, you are gaining increasing support of natural law for the effortless fulfillment of your desires. While at Maharshi University of Management, you have vitally contributed to the creation of a heavenly air of peace, positivity, and harmony on our campus, which in itself demonstrates that heaven can be created on earth. Through your daily group practice of the technologies of consciousness of Maharshi's Vedic science, the Maharshi Transcendental Meditation and TM City program, including yogic flying, you have helped create the Maharshi effect, spreading a beautiful influence of coherence in world consciousness and performing a global role as a creator of peace. With the knowledge of natural law you now possess, you are in a position to become the guiding light of your society, perpetually living the reality of higher states of consciousness and radiating success and an evolutionary nourishing influence around you. You have the ability to raise your profession to perfection by inspiring all your fellow professionals to connect their lives to the source of all professions, the unified field of natural law. With your fellow Maharshi University of Management graduates around the world, you are competent to transform life on Earth by fully utilizing the knowledge you have gained of the totality of natural law and specific values of natural law. As a leader of a new generation enjoying higher states of consciousness, you will nourish the whole world family so that it can rise to enjoy a supreme quality of life, irreversible peace and harmony, perfect individual and collective health, success, and happiness for everyone through support of natural law, heaven on earth, generation after generation. Thank you.